You're listening to Thrive, your agency resource, the only podcast of its kind for creative, media, and technology leaders who are ready to dive deeper into consciousness, leadership, and agency growth. I'm your host, Kelly Campbell. This year, Thrive is brought to you by E2M Solutions, a trusted white label partner to hundreds of digital agencies across the globe. Visit e2msolutions.com/thrive today. Leadership is a complex journey, isn't it? There's as much opportunity as there is responsibility. To transform the world toward positive change, leaders require three C's: competence, character, and consciousness. Today, I'm joined by Gretchen Pisano, co-founder and CEO of P-Link Leadership, an executive coaching and leadership development consultancy that fuses positive psychology with the discipline of leadership. Gretchen, thank you so much for joining me today. I am so excited to talk to you.
Same, Kelly, and thank you for having me.
So why do leaders get in their own way? What patterns have you seen over your 20 plus years of coaching?
I think that we sort of come charging out of those early years as a high achiever, higher performer, we get recognized, we get promoted, and everything is working really well until it doesn't. Because what we know is that the strategies that work for us when we're an individual contributor, you could even back it up further, that work for us as a student, work for us as a child, actually start to get in our way when we become leaders of other people. Mm-hmm. And there are really three big patterns in that set that are distinct from each other, but probably recognizable to your audience. So one is what I call like the golden retriever leader, who is the pleaser, right? They're just like, tell me what you want and I'll do it. And earlier in life, you can see exactly how that could work for somebody, right? Because they're a great doer, a great executor, they're easy to work with. They just kind of, but then they get into this leader position and you start to feel like, are they clear on what they're actually after? Do they know what the results are that they're pursuing? Will they tell me what they actually think? So it starts to get in a person's way. And let me be clear that when you're the leader whose patterns are interfering, you don't see it that way. And your outcomes kind of slowly degrade over time. So it takes a period of that feedback and some self-awareness to recognize it. So that's pattern one. Pattern two is what we think of as protecting or distance. Like this is the leader who drops back and they are kind of hard to feel out. They might show up at a meeting, but not say anything. They might also be sort of emotionally distant or aloof. So you can't really quite feel them or what their point of view is on something. Another way this pattern can show up is somebody who is hypercritical. Or I've seen it where people dominate a conversation with intellectual superiority, right? Like, so let me just kind of show you how smart I am. And then the third is controlling, which is my personal MO. But, you know, controlling is like all of those hard charging, ambitious, driven things you tend to think of as quality characteristics in a leader, but they're in overdrive and over-indexed. Mm-hmm. So this is a leader who railroads other people, who can chronically over-functions, who that's where that sort of perfectionism comes from. And in that kind of pattern, like not being that way equates to failure. The risk of failure. And so those are the three big ones that get in people's way. And those break down into more specific subcategories, but that is the way. So, you know, you've got your golden retrievers, you've got your kind of spotted owl who hangs back and just watches. And then you have like the rhinoceros, right? He's just the sort of hard charging.
I love these. I love the animal references also. It's interesting to think back to all of the leaders that we've either encountered, that we have worked for, or that we've encountered as clients, and how we can sort of really categorize every single one of them into one or a hybrid of two, right? So what I hear you saying immediately, because of the work that I do, is trauma, right? No one shows up in their leadership role like the rhinoceros or the golden retriever or the spotted owl for no reason, right? It's all because of something that has happened to them in the past or some experience that they've had. So here we're talking about an awareness of that, trauma-informed leadership. So We just talked about that in a couple of recent episodes, especially the one with Nicole Lewis Kieber. But where do we go after this correlation phase, right? Because it's one thing to correlate our trauma and our leadership style, but where do we go in terms of positive change?
So I like to think of this as a continuum, and it's really helpful. I had a coaching client who said something to me one day that really shifted things. When I was able to show him a pattern and how it was showing up over indexed, he said, I had always just thought I had an incurable disease, right? Like he had his identity so wrapped up in this particular style of leadership that had been criticized so often that he just saw himself as having an incurable disease. And therefore that's the way that he was. So this idea of being able to make the correlation, you know, raise your self-awareness around it, that's the consciousness piece, right? Yep. And then you get really clear on, okay, if this is who I am today, who is my future best self? And what is the promise that I want to make to them? And then you start to move from this place. You know, you have to do your work. Like you have to do your work. There is definitely a place for therapeutic interventions and doing the work of figuring out how the trauma has impacted you and how to kind of untangle that in a productive way, make new meaning of it, and kind of move to a better space of well-being. Right. So I'm intentional about not calling that happiness. There's a real happiness is a positive emotion, lasts 70 to 90 seconds in your body, and then it's gone. Well-being is a different sort of seated sense mm-hmm. of your having a center of gravity, knowing yourself. And let's just call that zero on this continuum. So if zero is neutral, then zero to minus 10 is the area of trauma to the psyche and the spirit and the work that has to happen there. Then from zero to plus 10 is what we think of as well suffering. And well suffering is the space of coaching. That is really the areas that coaches can help people intervene on their own behalf to level up from a place of neutral or plus 2 into greater and greater realizations of their own potential and expanding their capacity.
So interesting. I love the way that you talk about that. And that continuum makes so much sense, right? We are fluid evolutionary beings. Some may say multidimensional, but yeah, of course it would exist on a continuum, just like so many other aspects of our characters exist on a continuum.
You know, what's interesting though about that, Kelly, is that really up until 1999, like the field of human psychology is about 125 years old at that point. And up until about 1999, the researchers had only ever studied the side of the continuum that was trauma-based. And there's a whole explanation of that about federal funding and where the dollars were flowing after World War I and World War II. But in 1999, Martin Seligman, who was then president of the American Psychological Association, published Authentic Happiness. And all of a sudden, you know, that whole profession pivoted to understand that when we even recognize the other half of the human existence is there, then how do we start understanding what conditions need to be in place for people to thrive? And what does post-traumatic growth look like? And how do we build resilience ahead of time?
And that was going to be my next question. So okay. Let's talk a little bit about post-traumatic growth, because as you just said, there has been very little discussed on this topic. We're so focused on the attachment styles and what went wrong and what happened to us. Where do we go from here? And what does that growth look like post-trauma?
So interestingly, post-traumatic growth is just as statistically likely as PTSD, but we don't talk about it. And it's just so much less known that people aren't primed for it. And I think it's important to recognize, like, we are doing a good job bringing forward mental health issues and making that more of a normalized mainstream conversation. And this recognition that everybody has big T or little T or both. Like, you could even say life is traumatic, right? There are aspects of it that are inescapably traumatic. And we can have post-traumatic growth. So that is a place, that is an area of which you sort of, I think of it as boom and bloom, like something happens, you might have an initial setback, and then you boom and bloom out of that. You use that as like a leverage point to say, okay, so what is this next iteration of myself? what do I want to create for myself in that space?
Yeah. It's interesting because the way that you're also talking about that, I think of when you're actually doing the work, right? You're doing your own personal development or some kind of inner work where you're wrestling with one of those issues from the past, some past emotional wounding, and it's hard and it's, you have to unravel it and you wrestle it a little bit and it's painful and it's not happy. It's not something that anyone really looks forward to. But on the other side of that, I think of that as one of the examples of post-traumatic growth, right? On the other side of that, what does that feel like to sort of integrate those things and process those things in a way that you hadn't before? And what more becomes available to you because of that?
Yes. And I think for people who are in this space and doing the work, most have recognized like what an epiphany feels like and how fast, like you can wrestle with something for months, a year, and then all of a sudden something happens and you have this epiphany. And then the thing is like, it's instantly gone and you can't become unenlightened, right? I just think, so like one of mine was really powerful for me is I carried a narrative with me for a long time that my parents divorced when I was 10 and what happened in my life and their ongoing difficult relationship and how I kind of learned to live in suspended animation between them. And then like years later, I mean, I don't know, maybe two decades later, I had this epiphany that although I wasn't loved by my parents as a unit, I was fiercely loved by them individually. And I had just missed that point. I had just missed that part of the experience. You know, so that was one of those moments. And then it was like, and it kind of catapults you into this new higher level consciousness where then opens up new possibilities and opportunities.
Yeah.
Hey, let's take a quick break. Did you know that there's a better way to scale your agency? Whether it's web design, development, e-commerce, content, SEO, or even hosting, E2M is the reliable white label partner you wish you knew about years ago. Personally, I'm proud to partner with E2M because of our alignment in values and ethics. Head over to e2msolutions.com/thrive to learn more. Now, let's get back to the show.
Well, first of all, thank you for sharing that. I love when we can get vulnerable and we can normalize that vulnerability. But let's talk about that. It's a great segue because the impact that leaders, in this case, your parents, but in context of the rest of our conversation, leaders in business, leaders in organizations, let's talk about the impact that we have on others. So we have to lead with intentionality and we have to be accountable to ourselves for change, right? So you mentioned when we talked earlier that there was some new research out of the UK that talked a little bit about this. Can you say more about it?
Yeah, this is actually really recent. I think January of 2023. Mm-hmm. And it is a company called UKG and it was written by a woman named Tonya Eckert. Anyway, basically the research it's bringing forward, and I think the most startling statistic that stuck with me is that, and it's startling because we have the research, right, to support it, not because we don't know it, but that
that's
managers
for most research.
Exactly. I mean, like as a kid, my mom got her PhD when I was 10 in child psychology from Stanford. And I was in awe of her and also like, why do you have to study stuff we already know? Like that makes no sense to me, right? But this is, I think the timing of this, it was perfect, right? Which basically says that managers impact our mental health more than therapists, more than doctors, in the same as spouses or partners. And so when you think about, like, I had somebody tell me the other day, the two things that shape your day the most are your shoes and your car, if driving back and forth to work, right? Because if you're in pain all day because your shoes don't fit or your ride sucks or, you know, breaks down or whatever, that's going to really impact your mood. Well, what your experience is at the workplace, which is defined by your direct manager and even more so by the leader, right? Because it all cascades. That is what you take home with you. And self-regulation is a finite resource. It's like a bucket. And we can fill the bucket with things like meditation, exercise, good nutrition, sleep. But then if we're at work and we're emptying the bucket all day, self-regulating, right? Which is making the choice that I should make, even though I don't really want to in these interactions, then you go home with an empty bucket and you have your worst behavior with the people you love the most. And if you have a career like this and you do this for two decades, you have a really good chance of eroding the life that you're trying to build, destroying your primary relationship, getting estranged from your kids, sort of things coming apart. And I think the important part of this is to talk about it from both frames of reference, one from the employee frame of reference, right? Which is like, I want to work in a workplace where I thrive and for a leader who helps me to reach my potential and expand my capacity. As a leader, I want to do those things for myself too. And it's important that I acknowledge by virtue of my position that I have a responsibility and accountability to create that kind of space for the folks that work with me and for me, and that my impact is as big as their spouse or partner. Mm-hmm. I am a significant other.
Yeah, it's interesting. I resonate a lot with that. So when I owned my agency, I had that for 14 years. And over the course of those 14 years, because I was not great at self-regulation, I came home every single night with that empty bucket that you're talking about. And it really severely, severely impacted my marriage. It was a good marriage. And I was not showing up in a way that was healthy as a partner. And ultimately, it did lead to divorce. And I think that it's important to talk about these things, right? Because yes, there may have been other factors. However, that was a big one. You know, if I'm not coming home and fully present, for example, with my spouse, or if I am so dysregulated that I can't listen, I can't sit down long enough to have a meal without being pulled in different directions or thinking about something else while they're talking. You know, these are little things that are compounding over a period of time, and they do erode the relationship, as you said. I think in my case, I was spending so much time probably in that golden retriever phase of making sure everybody else was happy and okay and had everything that they needed, that I was not doing that for myself. And then that therefore impacted the relationship at home. So very, very important thing to talk about. Thank you for bringing that up. So I guess the question is specifically for agency leaders, how can we begin to accelerate this positive change within ourselves and within our larger organizations?
Well, I think that it's important to recognize that the relationship people have with work is changing. So pre-pandemic, the kinds of things that we're talking about right now, a lot of leaders would shuffle off to the side or delegate down, right? It's just really not that big of a deal. Leadership development is a nice to have. It's an HR benefit.
Right. Or we can't budget for that. I've heard.
Right. Right. Exactly. You can't budget for it. Post-pandemic, what we're recognizing is like our relationship with work is fundamentally changing. You know, as big as any of the other big shifts coming off the farms and going into the factories, coming out of the factories and going into sort of a knowledge economy at the very beginning and a digital revolution. We are now fully in that and it won't go backwards because people can't be unenlightened. And so what we really want to be thinking about is like there are going to be some CEOs and leadership teams who are resistant to change, right? These are the ones that are still arguing about whether we should put pronouns on emails, whether we can have casual Friday, whether we can really get rid of paper. There will be some that are leading the charge in showing how you can have a completely different kind of a workplace and what are the best practices of leading remote teams. And then there'll be others in the massive middle kind of waiting to come along. What I would say is that for agency leaders, you're in a long-standing, successful industry. So there's a real temptation to believe that you don't actually have to change. However, this is a solid competitive advantage. If you're willing to take it on, it is a solid competitive advantage. And what you'd want to do, first of all, is elevate the people development aspect of the business to a strategic imperative right alongside your other growth initiatives. And give your people person who's in charge of that a seat at the senior table because they need your perspective and you need theirs. So that's the first thing, right? This is a strategic imperative on par with your other growth initiatives. That's kind of number one. Then number two is to get to work on identifying the policies that need to change immediately. For example, remote work and flexible work. And how to support your current leaders in leading remote teams. They're going to need different set of skill sets to be able to create connection amongst a team of remote workers and accountability. And so there's a sort of a set of things you can go through. And I won't kind of bore your listeners with all of that, but that's a good starting place to put a flag in the ground to say, we're going to prioritize people development. And here's what that's going to look like. And here's the policies we're going to change right away, because that will send a clear signal to the organization that you mean it.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the idea of bringing that on par and as part of like the seats at the leadership table. So business development, people development, leadership development, marketing, all the things that you need, operations. So everybody having the seat at that table. And if you don't have someone in that role, what would you suggest?
If you didn't have somebody in the role at all, of you're going to have your almost any organization would have HR because they have to have compliance.
So
right,
and competence. Outsource that. And that's where I'm going, because some agencies, you know, 10 to let's say 30 employees, some of them are outsourcing their HR to a third party. And those third party people don't always have a seat at the table because it doesn't make sense for the organizational structure. What would someone do in a case like that?
So I think you could think about the outsourcing you're doing on the HR side of the house as just that, right? It's comp and bends and compliance, and that's okay. And then you think about how do you want your leadership development partner to be? And I like to think of that as like, we don't want to be called a vendor, because we're not coming in to kind of deliver something that's cookie cutter and just off the shelf and a force fit, right? It's really a leadership development partner who's willing to sit down with you and your other senior leaders to craft a leadership development approach that will work in your culture, right? And not just to sort of reaffirm the culture, which you don't want to do, because if you're growing, there's going to be some things you're going to need to change, but to really think about like, what's an appropriate stretch goal? Who needs to be included in that? And how do you cascade it into the organization? And my two big things in this is, one, senior leaders, like oftentimes a company will budget for leadership development, but the accountability is to attending, not to applying. So, and it's not unusual for them to budget it, put it on the calendar, and then senior leaders will schedule right over top of the leadership development efforts, which also sends a signal. And an employee isn't going to say no to their boss to say yes to the leadership development. So that all has to be aligned, and the accountability needs to be on applying. That being said, part of the process of designing an approach is having a clear target for people, right? This is what we're looking for in our leaders. And we need to see this, you know, this kind of behavior, not just ideology, but like, what's the behavior? And so that we're seeing that behavior, not seldomly, but almost always, and that it's permeating through our ranks. I'm sure based on your experience, you've had the experience where you've seen some leaders in their teams operating in one way and others operating in another way. And then, you know, what happens and come together. So I think that just like any kind of other kind of fractional partnership, you look for a fractional partner in the leadership development space, somebody like us or us that's doing executive coaching and leadership development, because there's work that has to be done one-on-one and there's work that has to be done in a group to move a whole organization, which is really a small community, right? Even if it's a global organization, you'll have sub-communities within that. And you do that work, you know, together, but that's not a heavy lift. You know, you get somebody who really understands architecture and understands co-creation, you co-create it, you get it going. And I think the biggest aspect of that is being realistic in what you design and having the senior leaders aligned and modeling it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just a huge waste of money. I wrote an article a few weeks ago on like $166 billion the leadership development industry is. $166 billion with zero accountability for applying. You know, so you really like, and I think it's a complete waste of time, money, and mind share to budget for it and then not be behind it, the senior leaders.
And it's also not what we're in this space for, right? Like, we want to feel the reward and come along and celebrate the gains and the wins and the changes and the evolution with the people who we're working with. So it's not fun for us either if there's no execution or it's not applied long-term after we're no longer with the organization.
Yeah, I think organizational growth is like individual growth, right? The organization has to have the capacity. The organization cannot be stuck in a trauma response and not have done that work and just skip over that and then go for the high speed growth, right? Because that other stuff will get in the way. So in the beginning of my career, I used to read the headlines about organizations that were doing a terrible job and thinking, wow, they really need executive coaching. They really need leadership development. And I was like, actually, no, not yet. You know, you're looking for the ones that are kind of approaching that neutral space or maybe have some new leaders in place who understand there's a different way and what they need is support and momentum, just like a person.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, organizations are essentially, they operate very similarly to people. And I love the fact that you used trauma response from the organizational standpoint. We could continue this conversation for a very long time. I think this is a good place to wrap though. Gretchen, thank you so much for joining me today. We will post links to your website and certainly tag you everywhere in social media. Thank you again.
You're so welcome, Kelly. And I just wish you continued good fortune in your work. I think you're doing really important stuff. So, and I also agree you could totally continue the conversation.
And thank you for joining us. If you liked this episode, please rate the show or subscribe wherever you watch or listen. And a big thank you to the official sponsor of Thrive for this year, E2M Solutions, your white label agency partner. Learn more about their approach, services, and subscription plans at e2msolutions.com/thrive.